calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio. It's beaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Cable Radio Network, CRN, in 29 states on cable TV systems, and also on AirAmericaRadio.com. Welcome back to our program. It's Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom. Happy Friday, happy weekend. And it's time for our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie.org, his website. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent member of the House of Representatives in that body's history. And he is now running for the United States Senate. You can learn more about that at Bernie.org. And, Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Also, let our folks know that if you'd like to call in, if you have questions or comments for Bernie, our toll-free number, 1-866-440-8466. And you're welcome, of course, to drop into our live chat room at TomHartman.com. Just click live chat. Bernie, Senator Clinton just came out, Hillary Clinton just came out and said she does not support a filibuster of the Alito nomination. What's your take on that? Not necessarily on her, but on the issue.
I would respectfully disagree with the senator on that position. I think, you know, filibusters are something that you don't want to do every day. But I am very, very concerned about the state of civil liberties in this country, about the state of constitutional rights. I am concerned about a president who believes that he really, in many ways, is above the law. And can kind of do whatever he wants so long as he thinks it's fighting terrorism. And he has already told us that the war on terrorism is never ending, never going to end. So he is radically redefining the role of the President of the United States. I am concerned that Judge Alito is sympathetic to that perspective of presidential autonomy and power over the Congress, over the American people. I am, needless to say, also concerned about the position of Roe versus Wade, that one vote could eliminate that important right that women have spent decades and decades struggling for. So I think, again, you don't do a filibuster every day, but I think there is a time that you draw a line in the sand, that you stand up and you say, wait a second, we understand that President Bush is a Republican. There are a lot of moderate Republicans. There are a lot of Republican judges out there who have mainstream politics. And why does he always have to go to the extreme right? In this case, somebody who's going to be working with Scalia, with Clarence Thomas, on the right wing of the bench. So, you know, in this point, the senator and I would disagree, I think.
Could it be that George W. Bush is always going to the extreme right because he is the right, extreme right?
He is, but I think the American people are not the extreme right. So what I'm saying, Tom, is you got a president who won two very close elections. Some of us don't believe he won the first election. We have a right to say to Mr. President, you know, why do you always appoint people who are the extreme right? Give us somebody. You know, he's not going to appoint a Supreme Court justice that I'm going to, you know, be jumping up and down about. But, you know, it's not unreasonable to say that you can appoint a moderate. Somebody who is somewhere in the middle of the political spectrum, not always on the extreme right. And I think the Democrats in the Senate have the right to make that demand.
Well, and in fact, with Ruth Bader Ginsburg and with Stephen Breyer, the two appointees of Bill Clinton, he appointed both of them after they were specifically recommended to him by Republican Orrin Hatch.
Right.
And so, you know, there's been no bipartisanship of any sort that I can discern on the part of this president.
I mean, and this just touches on, you know, the ideology and the process by which this White House goes forward. And that is they are going to go to the extreme right, and they're going to do everything that they can to make sure that those people gain appointments. And I think the Democrats have a right to say, excuse me, you know, but let's take another look at this.
Now, Bernie, we're speaking with Bernie Sanders. This is our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie.org is Bernie's website. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. Bernie, auto shows, this is the week all across the United States where the car companies are rolling out next year's models, and China is going to be selling in the United States, apparently next year, an automobile. When China imports a car into the United States, they pay a 2% import tariff. when General Motors exports a car from the United States into China, they have to pay China a 25% import tariff. What is wrong with this picture?
Well, what is wrong with that picture is the same thing that is wrong with our entire trade policy with China. Tom, we used to have a $160 billion trade deficit with China. I suspect strongly that number is going to go way, way up. And just, you know, if anyone out there who's listening remembers Christmas shopping and you went to the stores and you bought products, you kind of assume now that when you buy a product, whether it is a high-end product, whether it's a low-end product, whether it's a sophisticated piece of electronics, or whether it's a, you know, pair of sneakers, that product is now made in China. We've now taken it for granted. They manufacture the products that we use. Now, what you're talking about is huge, and that is that up to now, by and large, there have been no automobiles being made in China coming into the United States. Once that begins, I think that perhaps, you know, not tomorrow, but, you know, 5-10 years down the road, you could be saying goodbye to the automobile industry, which is so extraordinarily important for millions of American workers. We have already seen, as you know, General Motors announcing 30,000 layoffs. What was Ford? How many were they going to lay off?
Yeah, 30,000 at Ford, 25,000 at GM
25,
is my recollection.
And remember, when these companies announce layoffs, there's a spin effect on, you know, auto parts. Delphi Auto Parts is now going bankrupt. So,
well, Bernie, my understanding is that from the time that George Bush assumed the presidency until now, 180,000 jobs have been lost in the automotive industry, although most of them are in the parts manufacturing sector.
Tom, that's before the first Chinese car has come into this country.
That's right.
So if the auto industry goes, and if all the other smaller companies that provide services and parts and design and God knows what for the auto industry go, I mean, that is just another extraordinarily powerful blow against the capability of the United States to manufacture. I remember, Tom, I was in China a few years ago, and the thing about being in China is you see just an explosion of buildings all over the place. We know that American corporations are investing huge sums of money in China. We know the head of General Electric, a company that's received huge amounts of corporate welfare over the year from the taxpayers of this country. He said, when I look at the future of General Electric, I see China, China, and China. And it's not just him. It's virtually every major multinational corporation. I got a kick this morning, front page stories. U.S. watches China's rising star with anxiety. Now, isn't that something? The United States government is really concerned about the growing economy of China, their political influence all over the world. Now, isn't that a shock? Meanwhile, corporate America pushed this horrendous permanent normal trade relations on Congress so that we can expand trade with China in the sense that American corporations can throw American workers out on the street, move to China, pay people 50 cents an hour. They go to jail in China if they stand up for democratic rights, for unions. And isn't that amazing? George Bush supports this completely, and now, quote, U.S. watches China's rising star with anxiety, an AP story. Give me a break. These large corporations are selling out the American middle class. They're selling out workers. They're selling out our people. They're going to China as fast as they possibly can. The result of that, Tom, is not only the loss of good-paying jobs, it's putting tremendous pressure on wages. Millions of American workers are seeing a decline in their real wages, cuts in their benefits. And then you have these same corporations that push this China trade agreement, which I must tell you, I have legislation in Congress which would repeal permanent normal trade relations. We have over 70 co-sponsors, a number of Republicans as well as Democrats. And now these same corporations that pushed this trade agreement, they say, boy, we're in a very competitive world global economy. We have to ask American workers to take cuts in their wages, take cuts in their pensions, give up their pensions, take cuts in their health care. Gee, you know, we're competing against China. No kidding. You pushed us into those trade agreements. So,
and Bush is going to be pushing health savings accounts as the solution to all of this on Tuesday.
Right. So, you know, we have got to take a hard look at our trade agreements. Nobody, or at least I am certainly not anti-China. I want to see China play a stable and positive role in the global economy. I want to see them move to democracy. but we cannot sacrifice the middle class of this country, decent wages, decent jobs, because corporate America can make a quick buck by moving to China. So it is a huge, huge issue.
Yeah, and a growing one. Chinese, this is from yesterday's Wall Street Journal. Chinese authorities shut down an outspoken weekly publication in their latest effort to rein in the country's increasingly independent news media. This is just a collision here. What it demonstrates, I guess, is that capitalism can exist in the absence of democracy.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other discussion. It's 16 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartmann radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment, Bernie.org. His website, our telephone number, 866-440-8466. We'll be back with your calls right after this.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie.org, his website. I encourage you to check it out. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you are live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Great. Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie.
How are you?
I got your mailer. I'll be sending the money.
Thank you.
Listen, you know, I see this whole thing about the automobiles part of a bigger problem, and there are 175,000 parts-making jobs that have already been lost.
Yeah.
If we add 60,000 GM and Ford jobs to that, that's 235,000 jobs in the last few years. Korea won't let us export cars to them, but South Korea, we imported 700,000 cars from them last year. Japan and Germany protect their auto industry. We don't. Who is making the trade policies for us and giving away 75 years of building a strong American middle class?
Boy, that is a good question. And I'll tell you what the answer is, and I see this every day in Congress. You have corporate America, these big money interests, the large corporations, and their lobbyists working day and night on all kinds of issues attacking the middle class, but especially the straight issue. I remember very clearly, I mean, it's no great secret, this was written up in all the Washington newspapers, the last major debate we had on trade was this CAFTA thing, Central American Free Trade Agreement. And there it was right in the papers. If Republicans, and with some Republicans, you know, they go back to their districts, they see that these trade agreements have been a disaster. And so they said, no, I don't want to vote for these things. And the lobbyists were saying, if you vote against CAFTA, we are going to cut off your campaign funds. So this trade issue is not a whole lot different than the prescription drug bill, which was written by the pharmaceutical industry. This whole policy was developed by large corporations who very simply would prefer to pay Chinese workers 50 cents an hour than American workers 15 bucks an hour, prefer to work in an environment where workers have no rights, that work in an environment where workers may have unions, they have democratic rights, we protect, try to protect the environment, and so forth and so on. So to answer your question, there is a major assault and attack going on right now against the middle class of the United States of America. It is led by corporate interests who are doing phenomenally well as they lay off American workers, as they lower our wages, as they take away our pensions, and certainly the Bush administration is intricately part of that entire process.
Joe in Chicago, Illinois, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
A good day, Independent Senator Sanders and Liberal Media Representative Hartman.
Good day, Joe.
I'm really about done with all these senators who are not supporting a filibuster at this point. Any one of these Democrats who are a dino, a Democrat in name only, and don't want to come out in support of it, it's ridiculous. They said they've been saving this fight up, and I just called Barack Obama's office, and they've said that he's not to come out with a public statement on which way he's going to go on Alito. But it seems a little hypocritical of him after his Democratic National Convention speech where he spoke of having the audacity to hope and dream or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The answer here, I think, is without talking about any specific members of the Senate, senators and politicians in general look around them and they see the environment out there. And I think that the most effective way we change what goes on in Washington is we build a very strong grassroots movement so that when elected officials look out there and they find that 70% of their people say, excuse me, we're going to fight for civil liberties in this country, we're going to fight for a woman's right to choose, and therefore we have to do A, B, and C, perhaps including a filibuster, then it's an easy vote. But our job is not just, I mean, putting pressure on elected officials is fine. That's what we're supposed to do also. But we have to build a progressive grassroots movement. We have to demand that the media give us all sides of the issues. We've got to organize and we've got to educate. And when we do those things at the bottom, those ideas filter up on the tops, and then it becomes easy decisions for elected officials rather than saying, gee, if I do this, am I going to get reelected? Is a bad guy going to replace me? And so forth and so on. So that's my view on that.
Kenny in Baltimore, Maryland. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Kenny.
Bernie.
Hi, Kenny.
Hey, I just want to let y'all know that we're pushing for an email sent to CNN. We're trying to get a million emails sent into CNN. We're trying to push your show, Tom, and we're also trying to push Young Turks' show to try to get it onto CNN to get some balance going.
Are you concerned, Kenny, because CNN just hired right-wing talk show host Glenn Beck and former Congressman J.C. Watts as commentators, and they haven't hired any progressives?
Right, and so right now Young Turks, they staying on the air trying to push for the...
Yeah, they're doing a filibuster.
Yeah, they're doing a filibuster 24 hours. I've been up with them all night. And
Yeah, I might be on this weekend if they're continuing over the weekend. I was just corresponding with them.
Yeah, so we're trying to push this thing and... Just want every listener to try to just take a minute, go on CNN.com, go to contact them, send an email in them, tell them we want a progressive show to balance this thing out. We got to start somewhere.
Let me really, Kenny, congratulations. That is exactly what we have to do. That's the grassroots effort that we need to tell corporate America that there are two sides to the story and not just a right-wing, corporately controlled side. So I want to congratulate Kenny for doing that.
Well said, Bernie. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us on the True People's Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
They say that Richard Corey owns one half of this whole town with political connections to spread his wealth around.
And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman radio program for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie.org, his website. The only independent member of the House of Representatives, the longest-serving independent member of the House of Representatives, now running as an independent for the United States Senate, the congressman from Vermont. And our Brunch with Bernie segment, Wayne in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You're on live with Bernie Sanders. Hey, Wayne. Wayne, you got to listen to your phone, not your radio.
I am listening to my phone.
Okay, you're on the air.
I enjoy this segment. One of the things that I'm not hearing anybody mention with these automakers are the national security implications.
That's right.
I mean, at the beginning of World War II, the automakers were able to go from automobiles to tanks and trucks within 6 months. If we have no industrial capability here, I mean, and this Bush guy gets us in some kind of a war, I don't know what we're going to do because we couldn't supply it.
It's almost like a Manchurian candidate scenario, Bernie.
Wayne raises a very, very important point. It is talked about, but not enough. And that is, if you don't have the capability to build machinery, if you don't have the capability to build vehicles, how are you going to build the weaponry and the parts that we need to defend ourselves? Are we going to go to China and say, please supply us with weapons because we're concerned about your military prowess? I don't think so. And there are some people who are talking about this, Wayne, but not enough. But the military implications of the deindustrialization of the United States of America, the collapse of our manufacturing capabilities, is a huge issue. So it goes beyond the loss of jobs, beyond the loss of wages, and raises the question of whether we are able to defend ourselves.
Alice is on with us from Humboldt County. Alice is turning 92 next month and listening on KGOE. Hey, Alice.
Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Alice.
I fear it is taking much too long for good elected officials like yourself to do something about the voting machines. They are why we have all these corrupt clowns.
Okay, let me say a word about that. This is an issue that Tom and I, and I know many people, are concerned about and have discussed. To my mind, we have got to be extremely vigilant in demanding. This is what an American democracy is about. It's the bedrock of our constitutional rights, that every vote cast in America is accurately counted. And I'll tell you this. To me, you want to be safe rather than sorry. You want to be conservative on this. And if people have doubts or officials have doubts about the potential of any voting machinery in America to be altered, to be manipulated, don't use it. Don't use it. Let's be conservative. So it takes another hour to count the votes. I think most Americans would rather see that those votes are counted accurately rather than leave any shred of doubt about whether the votes have been manipulated. You know, Tom, we've discussed this before. Canada just had its election.
Yeah, we had the national news editor from the Globe and Mail on the program.
Now, am I correct in thinking that in Canada they vote with paper ballots?
That's what I asked him. I said, you guys just had a national election. How did you vote? And he said, we voted with paper. He said, X's and pencils on paper. And I said, you know, you make X's on paper with a pencil. And he said, yes. And I said, no voting machines. And he said, no. He said,
does
we don't
anybody
want
have
them.
Any concerns about the accuracy?
No, there were no doubts. There were no doubts.
You know, so here you
and they knew within an hour of the time the polls closed who won, by the way.
So this is one of the great advantages. I mean, sometimes these great technological breakthroughs are wonderful. All over America, people are wondering whether or not their votes are being manipulated. The Canadians vote with paper and pencil. An hour later, they have the results. It's done by an independent, nonpartisan institution, as I understand it.
Yeah, the polling. But the government, I mean, actually, you know, they were counting as they were going along.
And I've not heard one word of, you know, anyone saying that the votes were less than accurate.
No.
So why do we have to have so many, you know, questions in this country? So, I mean, obviously we're looking at paper trails for all of these touchscreen machines, but I would rather be safe than sorry, conservative rather than leave doubts in people's minds. Let's make sure that the American people feel confident that every vote cast is counted, and that's something that we've got to really work on.
Yeah, as all the European countries, by the way, also use paper on pencil, except for Belgium. They've been playing around with some machines there, but it's by no means you know sure that they're going to stay with it. Stevie in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Stevie, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hello, Tom. I just got to tell you, I love your show, and I love these segments with the congressman. I'm at the point now where I'm really, really concerned. I mean, Congressman, you're on the inside. I'm outside looking in, and it seems like corporate America just wants to take us out completely, and I just don't understand that.
Well, Steve, you have every legitimate reason to be concerned, and here's the bottom line. You know, pretty soon we're not going to call them corporate America because they don't care about America. They don't care about American workers. They don't care about this nation. The only thing they care about is the bottom line 3 months from now and the kind of compensation that their CEOs are getting. And if corporate America can become corporate China, it doesn't really matter to them. What matters is how much money that they can make. And people have got to wake up to that fact. You know, one of the particular outrages that we deal with in the Congress is not only a disastrous trade policy, which these guys have developed and pushed on Congress, which enables them to throw American workers out on the street and move to China and other countries, but believe it or not, these very same companies that are doing that end up getting your taxpayer dollars in corporate welfare. It's unbelievable. So, you know, that's the bottom line. And, Steve, your concerns are legitimate. They're going to war against the American worker, against the American middle class, and it's about time we fought back.
Dan in Templeton, California, you're live with Bernie Sanders. Dan?
Oh, yeah. Congressman?
Yes.
It's been my concern for quite some time. The way I've always saw it, my thinking is that Bush has always been at war with the middle class America for whatever, just little things that I just pick up. You know,
You still there, Dan?
I was kind of a detailed person because I did work there. Again, you were talking about the voting thing. I did work in the computer industry for quite a few years. Matter of fact, I was one of the very beginners of it. And the card thing that I saw down in Florida was the biggest joke I've ever seen. If I'm paralyzed now. If I would have had two hands, I'd have went down there and showed him. I said, you know, that's not, you don't look at little holes to verify them. You know, you wait. I used to do like 10,000 cards per day, and I never heard it in my life.
Dan, pardon me for interrupting. Do you have a specific question for Congressman Sanders?
Yes. Well, for one thing about the voting thing, they always talk about verification with the paper printout on the thing. That isn't going to mean anything. Which, you know, I get a little tag now when they rip off the ballot. Now, I can't verify that what I voted for was really registered.
Well, I think, Dan, we've got to take a real hard look at the whole issue. And to my mind, as I said earlier, if there are any doubts, if people have any concerns that these Diebold or other types of machines can be manipulated, why do it? Why do it? Let's go. I mean, I would much prefer to go to paper ballots and be safe on that, and that everybody agree that that's the way we should go until we can be 100% sure that these other types of machines are accurate.
John in Anagordis, Washington, if I'm pronouncing that right, John.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for the forum, Tom, and Congressman, thank you so much for your service. Just two quick questions. Isn't it time that the Democratic Party make it clear that if senators aren't going to make a stand now, that those senators should not be considered as presidential candidates in 2008? And number two, isn't it also time, with everything you've just got done saying about corporatism, that we start branding these neocons what they really are, and that is neo-fascists?
Well, I mean, two things. In terms of who the Democratic, I'm an independent, as you know, not a Democrat, and we work closely with Democrats, and I helped found the Progressive Caucus, which is about 53 Democrats and myself. But, you know, there's going to be a process, and people have got to take many aspects of candidates' positions into account when they decide whether they're going to support candidate A or candidate B for president of the United States, and that goes without saying. Your second point, in terms of you know, throwing terms around, I'm not impressed by terms. What I am impressed by is the hard work that we need to do to organize people so that the middle class of this country is not destroyed, so that all of our people have health care, so that the media gives different points of view. Kenny, you know, a half hour ago or 15 minutes ago called up and said, you know, it's an outrage that CNN is, you know, going to the right again, pointing at right-wing talk show hosts rather than not having progressive talk show hosts. That's a real concrete piece of activity that we can involve people to stand up to. So I'm not a great fan of, you know, we can give whatever terms you want. We know that we have the most right-wing extremist administration and Congress, I should say, in the modern history of the United States. People who work night and day for the wealthy and the powerful ignore the middle class. That's enough for me. I don't need any more labels. We've got to organize, we've got to educate, and we've got to end one-party rule in America and get rid of these guys and put in other people who are going to start representing ordinary folks.
Bernie, we have to take a break in just a second. So just very quickly, what's the first step that you would recommend to people who want to become activists?
Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do here in the state of Vermont. You know, as you mentioned, Tom, I'm running for the U.S. Senate. We're going to be knocking on every door in the state of Vermont with good literature talking about the real issues impacting real people's lives.
So get out there and volunteer for a campaign. Involve yourself with a candidate. Show up at party meetings.
That's right. Do the hard work.
There you go. Yeah, well said. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie segment. It's 45 minutes past the hour, the place where reason is our lifestyle choice, right here on the Tom Hartmann radio program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Civil rights leaders are a pain in the neck. Can't hold a candle to Chiang Kai-shek. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News. and the bombers are afraid of a fight. Peace hurts business, and that ain't right. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News.
And welcome back, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where being progressive never felt so good. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Charlie in Cape May, New Jersey. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
How you doing? Listen, I have absolutely no sympathy for these auto workers or the auto companies being in the position they're in today. First of all, I'm a tractor-trailer driver. My wife's a registered nurse, okay? She has a college degree, and I've been doing this for 30 years. So between the two of us, we make about as much money an hour as a spot welder at General Motors makes, okay? Some guy who sits there all day long doing the same thing time after time after time. And his benefit package is nothing more than unbelievably spectacular. Lifetime medical, the whole nine yards. When I go to buy a car every 6 years, the price of the automobile has jumped up about $10,000 to pay for these exorbitant wages that these people get. And they've been getting them forever. I have no sympathy for them.
Let me just respond to you. I think your anger is focused on the wrong people. What happened in the automobile industry starting in the 30s is workers organized and, in fact, created a situation where they make solid middle-class wages and, in fact, as you indicate, they make good benefits. What's wrong with that? What is wrong with that? Why can't all Americans?
I'm in the Teamsters Union, and I get $22 an hour, and my wife's a nurse in the union, and she gets $30 an hour. That's two people getting, one with a college degree, getting the same money as a spot welder. It's exorbitant, my friend. I live in New Jersey. I don't live I pay $7,000 a year in property taxes and $6,000 a year in insurance. Okay, that's a lot. It's a lot cheaper to live in Michigan than it is to live here. The whole scheme is bad. It's bad from the top to the bottom. The fact that the corporations that own these companies didn't learn back in the 70s that if they keep making gas-guzzling tanks,
right,
that they were going to get stuck as soon as oil prices went up is another reason. I have no sympathy for any of them. The whole state and the base of their...
But do you have sympathy? Let me ask you this. You're making... Stay on for a minute. Do you have sympathy for CEOs who make 400 times...
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
But here's what we don't want to do, my friend.
You can't just blame it on them.
Here's what we don't want to do. The fact that some workers in America, and this is what a lot of my right-wing friends are doing, the fact that some workers in America are making... And by the way, I don't think these guys are making $50 an hour.
Oh, yes, they are.
Well,
yes,
that's
they are.
That doesn't
include their benefits.
I don't think they're making $50 an hour. But the fact that people are making good wages, what we want to see is every worker in America making decent wages, not $5.15 an hour. So I think we got to stick together and find out why wages in America are declining, why people are working 50 or 60 hours a week in order to pay the bills.
In order to pay for $45,000 automobiles.
Now, if you look at
$30,000 cars to drag your family around it, unless you want to drive.
Charlie, you realize you're advocating a race to the bottom. You're saying because your wages are lousy, everybody else's should be.
My wages are good.
His wages are not lousy.
You know, between the two of us, we make over $100,000 a year.
I mean, and that's good.
A pretty good wage, but I'm telling you, it's exorbitant the wages that these automakers.
Okay. I think
outrageous.
Okay, thanks for your thought. But I think what we have to do is see if we can raise other people to solid middle class benefits. I don't think that auto workers are making $50 an hour, but I am concerned that in America today we have the most unequal distribution of wealth and income, that the people who are really making out like bandits are not automobile workers, but CEOs who make tens and tens of millions of dollars a year and then get tax breaks from George Bush. I think we got to stand together and not get divided up because somebody is doing better than somebody else in the middle class.
Jerry in Olympia, Washington, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hello.
Hey, Jerry.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, I was listening to another progressive talk radio host yesterday. It was cautioning caution. I won't mention names, but he's pretty big. And he was cautioning caution on the filibuster that it may annoy the center. And I wanted to get Bernie's outlook on that, because it seems to me that movement never starts from the center. It always, the center ends up...
Yeah. We only have a minute left, Jerry.
Well, what I would say, Jerry, is, you know, people can disagree. I think that these are critical times. And, you know, if I were in the Senate, I would be part of a filibuster effort. I mean, honest people would disagree with that. But I think the times are so critical to challenge the constitutional rights, the women's right to vote. It is important for Democrats to stand up and say, excuse me, this guy is a right-winger. We know he's going to go with the right-wing in the Supreme Court. Let's get a moderate person, somebody who's more in line with mainstream American values. That's my view. Others can honestly disagree.
Okay. And real quickly, Jack in East Greenwich, Rhode Island.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on what Charlie said earlier, because he seemed to hit a nerve. I've been hearing a lot of people, like from the Wall Street Journal and the mainstream media, talking about how our automakers, Ford and GM in particular, have a hugely unfair burden created by the labor union.
Yeah, and Jack, we're gonna have to pick that up next week with Bernie. I'm sorry.
Well,
Bernie, toss a few comments in here if you'd like.
Well, basically, of course, the Wall Street Journal editorial phase is vehemently anti-union, and if we lower everybody's wages in America, do away with pensions and health care, yeah, I guess we can begin effectively competing with China.
There you go. Bernie Sanders, Bernie.org, his website. Please check it out. Thanks so much for being with us today, Bernie.
Thank you.
And we'll see you, the week after next.
Okay, take care, Tom.
It's our Brunch with Bernie segment on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where we run rings around the right wing every single day.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I don't think so. Just to very quickly wrap up our last hour, Brett in Waterloo, Illinois, has a factoid for us. Hey, Brett, welcome to the program.
Hi, I was just calling. I wanted to say I love your show.
Thank you.
And my father has worked in the automobile building industry for 35 years, and he has never made more than $30 an hour.
Yeah, so the guy who called up earlier was ranting about welders making $50 an hour was just wrong.
Exactly, and welders aren't even skilled labor. My father is skilled labor.
Yeah.
In that business. And,
okay.
The thing is, he works a lot of overtime, and that's how he makes a lot of money. So.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling that guy was working off Rush Limbaugh talking points. But in any case, Brett, thanks a lot for clearing that up for us.
Thank you, Tom. Much
appreciated. Paul Craig Roberts is with us. He's a former senior research fellow at the Hoover Institution, former assistant secretary of the Treasury in the Reagan administration, a prolific and popular journalist, former associate editor of the Wall Street Journal, and a professor of economics. Paul Craig Roberts, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you, Tom.
Great to have you with us. It's always great to have you with us. It's good to hear from principled conservatives. You have been looking at this reauthorization of the Patriot Act.
Yes.
Tell us what you're finding.
All right. What is buried? I mean, there's a lot of things wrong with this act, but the only thing I mentioned recently was buried in the act, they create a new police force. They take the uniformed Secret Service, which already exists today but has a very narrow jurisdiction. It's the White House, the Treasury, the old executive office building, the vice president's home, and they take this police, which has very limited jurisdiction, and they turn it into a national federal police, the jurisdiction of which is wherever the president or the Secretary of Homeland Security declare it to be. So the jurisdiction now can be anywhere that they say. This is a new development. We've never had a national federal police force.
And this frankly, I lived a year in Germany and you know, dug quite a bit into what happened in World War II and prior to that. And 6-8 months after Hitler came to power, he created a federal police force. It became to be known as the SS.
That's funny, yes, because many readers have pointed out to me that Secret Service is also SS.
Yeah. Well, these new police, you say, are empowered to, and this is quoting from the Patriot Act, make arrests without warrant for any offense against the United States committed in their presence or for any felony cognizable under the laws of the United States if they have reasonable grounds to believe that the person to be arrested is committed or is committing such a felony. This is reasonable. It doesn't talk about the basis of the Fourth Amendment, probable cause. Is this why we find the NSA head using the word reasonable and refuting the idea that probable cause even exists in the Fourth Amendment?
Yes, I think that's it. The language is very vague and basically gives carte blanche powers to the police or to whoever directs them. And to have these kinds of undefined terms, which don't really limit or circumscribe the powers of the new federal police force, does make it very much seem like a Gestapo. It could easily be used as one if someone wanted to, because the language in the bill would permit it.
So why isn't, you know, we're speaking with Paul Craig Roberts, a prolific author, former associate editor of the Wall Street Journal, former assistant secretary of Treasury in the Reagan administration. Paul Craig Roberts, if this is there in the Patriot Act, and you can actually go read it, you know, it's House Report 109-333, U.S. Patriot Improvement and Reauthorization Act of 2005. This is from Section 605. That it is hereby created and established a permanent police force to be known as the United States Secret Service Uniform Division, and that it's empowered to make arrests without warrant for any offense against, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is there. How come I'm not hearing from more people about this? I'm surprised I'm not hearing from the usual suspects on both the right and the left that you know, is Ron Paul out there yelling about this on the right, or is, you know, is...
Well, on the... you know, I think the answer is there's so much to yell about.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever tried to read one of these bills?
Well, so much of it is...
It's not a pleasant thing. So that's two reasons. I think a third reason is that everybody is all worried about terrorists and 9/11. And so we have to be protected. And they just think that this is something that protects them from terrorists. They don't realize that the real terrorist will be the police with these kinds of vague, arbitrary powers.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't realize they're in far more threat from an unaccountable executive with a Gestapo than they are from Muslim terrorists.
So what do we do? How do we get the word out?
I don't know. You see, it's very difficult. I think one of the biggest problems is that about half of the American people are just completely uninformed. I was just now reading a poll in New York Times. It says slightly over 50% of Americans polled give an okay to warrantless wiretapping.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if they want to spy on you without a warrant, they think that's necessary in order to protect them from terrorists. But of course it isn't. The reason they have the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and the secret court composed of a panel of federal judges is to make sure that when the president spies, it's for legitimate reasons and not to collect blackmail on the political opposition.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need to have warrantless spying in order to spy on terrorists. You just go to the court and say, look, here's terrorist number A. We want to spy on him. This is the reason.
Right.
In fact, the act lets you go spy on him for 3 days before you ever even go to the court.
Right.
It's just a check to be sure that they don't use the spying for getting up dirt on the opposition and then silencing the opposition.
Paul now, Craig Roberts
here. They've been doing that for 6 years. And so the real question is, you ask me, why don't we hear more? Well, who knows? One possible answer is they've got so much dirt on the Democratic Party, it can't be an opposition party. They got so much dirt on the editors and reporters that they can't say anything.
Hmm.
That's one explanation.
That's certainly what J. Edgar Hoover had done when he had run amok, and that's certainly what happened in Germany. It just the question comes to mind. You know, obviously some Republicans know about this because they wrote it into the legislation. Why? Why would any American politician write into legislation that the president's security force, the Secret Service, which is basically set up just to protect the president and other senior members of the executive branch, that the president's security force instantly becomes a nationwide national police force with the authority to arrest anybody anywhere without a warrant for whatever they whenever they decide at their own decision? There's reason to arrest such a person. Why would anybody put that into legislation in the first place?
Well, you could simply say the brown shirts wanted the Gestapo. You know, they may have put it in there in order to...
I mean, Denny Hastert has to know about this. Tom DeLay has to know about this. Bill Frist has to know about this. Are you suggesting they're the brown shirts?
Look, it may well help them. What they may have in mind is preventing demonstrations at events at which Bush is present. So if he travels around the country, they've now extended the jurisdiction of the Secret Service. So if there are demonstrators there, they can be arrested or they can be shoved aside. Or it may be simply that could be what's in their head. But you see, it's a slippery slope. Once you have that police and once it has those powers, anybody can use it for any kind of reason that they want. Do you see what I'm saying? It becomes a Gestapo potential.
Yeah. Or a Schutzstaffel, the SS, the Schutzstaffel, the Germans.
Yeah,
it's a
potential to...
Which started out, by the way, as the Reichssicher Heisstaubamt, I can't pronounce it, as Hitler's private police. I mean, this is so spooky. This is virtually the same thing. The leaders, you know, the president's private police, in that case, the chancellor's private police, is now becoming a national police force, and it's right there in the Patriot Act. Paul Craig Roberts, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention and the attention of as many Americans as possible. We'll continue to share the good word on it as well.
Well, thanks for sharing your office.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for being with us.
It's
16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, The True People's Radio.
A.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost.
Nah, come on.
Everybody knows the fight is fixed.
Yeah, we know that.
Poor stay poor. The rich get rich, that's how it goes. Everybody
no, I think we can challenge conventional wisdom. Here I am yelling at my bumper music. Welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman radio program. We announced earlier in the day that Senator Hillary Clinton would not support a filibuster of Sam Alito. Raw Story is reporting that they've confirmed with Philippe Raines, the press secretary of Senator Clinton, that Senator Clinton will vote against cloture, thereby supporting the filibuster of Judge Alito's nomination. I don't know which is the case. Maybe Greg Gorman does with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Greg, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Tom. You know, I love how you always say what's happening in the belly of the beast, so I wanted to let you know that actually today I'm literally standing in front of the belly of the beast. I'm actually looking at the Marine guarding the Oval Office.
Oh my goodness!
By the White House. I've just left the White House press briefing. And
that's interesting because you think of the belly of the beast as the White House. I think of it as the Pentagon, frankly. But you know, it's close.
I think there are a few beasts.
There you go.
You know what you were just talking about, this whole Alito, you know, filibuster issue. This morning, Scott McClellan took the gloves off and he called out Senator Kerry. As you may have heard, he actually just did it again in the White House briefing, saying that it was a historic day yesterday. It was the first time that there's been a call for a filibuster from the slopes of Davos, Switzerland. And, of course, you know, the White House is trying to lead people to believe that Senator Kerry is in Switzerland, you know, skiing on the slopes, when in reality he's at the World Economic Forum.
Right.
So it's getting a little ugly now. It actually just came up again in the briefing. He said the same statement about Senator Kerry, and he also said that maybe Senator Kerry should spend more time inside the chambers of the U.S. Senate. He seems to have forgotten the rules because he's called for a filibuster without enough votes. So, you know, it's getting a little ugly now. This whole issue of will there or will there not be a filibuster and who will support it is actually going to stretch out through the weekend. And, of course, we've heard from Senator Spector from Senator Frist, who said he wants to call a vote on Tuesday. So there are, you know, still three more days to talk about this.
Now, Hillary Clinton, I have gotten two news reports so far. One said that she will not support a filibuster. The other says that she will. David, you're bouncing your head up and down. Do you know something I don't know? David Poole here.
No, I just got the same email you did that she will support a filibuster.
Raw story. Okay.
Actually what I just heard here downstairs in the briefing room that she will support the filibuster. So that's a difference from what I heard this morning, which was that she won't. I mean, you know, that's really how it's playing out right now. It's getting down and dirty. You know, the White House is taking the gloves off. All the senators are taking their gloves off. It's really going to see if they have votes.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, though, a vote against Alito when you are in the minority is a vote for Alito and maybe a little wussy statement. Whereas a vote against Alito and a vote for a filibuster is a real vote against Alito.
Well, you know, Tom, that's exactly right. That's exactly what people here at the White House have been saying all day, in that if you are a Democrat and you are voting against Alito but you are not supporting any kind of filibuster, it means you know that he's going to be confirmed. However, if you are a presidential candidate, for example, Hillary Clinton or John Kerry, and you're calling for a filibuster, you are digging in and saying, I don't want to support this nominee. I do not want him on the Supreme Court.
But it's more than presidential candidates who are calling for filibusters.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, you know, it's a...
They're trying to portray it as this is all about politics. This is not all about politics. This is all about defending the Constitution of the United States, Greg.
No, but...
Well, I shouldn't be yelling at you. I should be yelling at Scotty McClellan. Sorry.
No. And that's absolutely true. I'm just saying, here people around the White House are looking at it as, is this a campaign ploy, or are they really going against...
I don't think they're looking at it that way, Greg. I think they're trying to spin it that way. I think they're trying to spin it as this is a campaign ploy. I mean, one of the really disheartening things to me is to hear some voices out there on the left echoing this DLC wussy Democrat, Bob Schrum, let's lose another five elections. We got to keep our powder dry. I mean, can you imagine if George Washington, who didn't win every battle he fought, if George Washington had said, well, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to fight that battle. I'm going to keep my powder dry for the next one. Come on, we wouldn't be independent of the Great Britain.
You know what? I'm not going to disagree with you. You are absolutely right. This is, you know, it's draw a line in the sand time. Either you want him on the Supreme Court or you don't. And it looks like John Kerry... Kennedy and Senator Clinton are saying, we do not want this man on the Supreme Court. He's the wrong choice. He's going to take the country in the wrong way. He believes in too much executive power, and he would be a huge mistake as the next Supreme Court justice.
Yeah. We have a few seconds left, Greg. Any other hot stories coming out of Washington, D.C. today?
Well, the only other thing is we heard this morning from the, you know, on the fourth quarter GDP numbers, they are down. And, Tom, you know, that bolsters a little bit of what you've been saying. According to the White House, it's the hurricane and it's low auto sales that have brought the GDP down. It's not what they expected. They hope for higher numbers.
Right. Interesting. So we may be sliding into a recession, in other words.
Contrary to what the White House has been telling us, maybe the economy is not as great as they said.
Yeah. Okay. Greg Gorman with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Greg, thanks so much for being with us today.
Always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you soon. 27 minutes past the hour at the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Or at least, you know, clean elections and reasonable Supreme Court nominees.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
There is a war between the rich and poor, a war between the man and the woman. There is a war between the left and right, a war between the black and white, a war between the odd and the even.
And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Coming up on 25 before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, the radio program. We're tuning in as easy as getting a White House press pass if you're a gay hooker. Welcome back to our program. Judy in Dana Point, California on the line. Hey, Judy, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Tom. You know, what concerns me about all this that's been going on in Washington is they are so driven to be in power. I want to know how they're going to contrive to keep Bush in power to be the king or the dictator or whatever he declares himself.
One way they could do it is by having a national emergency. If the United States was
exactly that, or maybe a war in Iran, and he would declare martial law, and then he would, be out there saying, "Oh, I have to stay in power," you know. And that really concerns me. I'm really getting worried.
Yeah, I am too. And if you get Sam Alito on the Supreme Court, he's a guy who will say, "Fine, you want to have your own SS and have them be able to arrest people without warrants anywhere in the United States? That's fine."
Did you hear, I'm sorry I interrupt you, did you hear, I'm sure if I heard on your program or another program, that the prosecutor for Ivanov, he appointed him a federal judge to get him off being the prosecution, I mean the guy who's doing all the investigation. Did you hear that?
Yeah. I did. In fact, David is running in right now with the printout of the story.
Here's the
investigation of Jack Abramoff, the disgraced Republican lobbyist, took a surprising new turn yesterday when the Justice Department said the chief prosecutor in the inquiry would step down next week because he's been nominated to a federal judgeship by President Bush. You will recall one of the chief guys working with Patrick Fitzgerald, closing in on the Valerie Plame leaker.
Right.
Was also nominated to a federal judgeship by Bush at a critical moment.
That was my next point. But look who's taking his place. They're going to nominate
too. Let's see. Noel Hillman is stepping down. Who's taking his place? You tell me.
You know what? I had it in my mind, and it just went out.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I went blank.
That's okay. What is it? A crony of Bush's? I haven't finished reading the story.
Yeah, it is.
I was going to do it during this break.
It's one of his cronies, and you know what? As soon as I hang up, I'm going to think of his name, and then I'll be mad. But now I can't. But I'm sure it's going to come across the wires, and you'll see it.
Yeah.
But you know what? This is my concern, and you know, I live in a very, very Republican area in Orange County, but there is more progressives coming down here more and more, and we're getting very concerned. This is scary stuff. Really bad.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I don't disagree.
I don't disagree.
Thanks a lot, Judy, for the call
and for
raising the alarm there. We need to be doing it with more people. Glenda in Mill Creek, Washington. Hey, Glenda.
Oh, hi, Tom. I just love your program.
Well, thank you. I'm having fun, too. Yeah. Although I'm frankly very concerned. What concerns me the most, Glenda, is hearing liberals, Democrats, hearing, I don't want to say progressives because I don't think a progressive would ever say it, but hearing Democrats say that we shouldn't filibuster the Alito nomination because that would be picking a fight. And you don't want to pick a fight with the Republicans because then you'll have to pay a high political price. And what that says to me is that person is saying that they are such a wuss, such a wimp, that they are afraid of a fight. And I'm telling you, the Republicans are never afraid of a fight. They fight tooth and nail on everything.
That's true. And that really is a problem for the Democrats. I do. And I believe that as an American, we all have to get on our phones right now. If you try to email most of these senators, you can never get through.
No, and they don't take email seriously because, you know, it's possible to generate 10,000 emails with a push of a button. But you can call them toll-free at 888-355-3588 or 888-818-6641. Or you can call if you have, you know, free long distance because sometimes you get it put on hold for 20 minutes. You can call straight into the switchboard in Washington, D.C., 202-225-3588. 3121. All three of those numbers ring in the same place. It's just the first two are toll-free.
Well, and I ended up going on my internet, and I ended up Googling U.S. phone numbers for the U.S. senators.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up calling 10 of the ones that I felt were moderate Republicans, and then like people like Ben Nelson and Robert Byrd. I mean, it just, I saw the piece on television where how Judge Alito is going in and lobbying Byrd's vote by giving him baseball paraphernalia.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, for me, this is not a Republican or Democratic issue. It's an American issue. Our democracy is being so threatened. And for the senators not to stand up and to say, I'm not going to vote for this man who wants to abuse executive power and no longer retain checks and balances, I mean, I cannot believe it, because what I, honestly they're doing is they're just making their own roles as senators obsolete.
I'm just boggled. I am boggled that if Senator Byrd has lost it, has, you know, that much, that he would actually vote for Alito. I mean, you know, if he's going to vote, I understand. He has an election coming up. It's going to be tough. I actually, you know, contributed $25 to his campaign. I went to his website and I gave him $25. It would, you know, I got an email. I thought, this guy is a good guy. Robert Byrd has stood up for a lot of things over the years. And maybe he's starting to lose it. But you would think that his staff would be protecting him. I just can't believe that he looked at Sam Alito and said, yeah, this is a guy who should be on the Supreme Court. I don't get it. I'm totally mystified.
Well, I am too, and I think as Americans, even though the phone lines were busy, because I actually called the direct line into all the different senators and talked to them, and they were all very polite, and so they would pass on my message. But I called them directly, and I have to say I think they're kind of overburdened right now.
Oh, yeah, they're slammed. And very often what you have to do is what you did, Glenda, and that is look up their local office. You know, for example, you know, here in Oregon I've got Gordon Smith and Ron Wyden, and if you try and call their U.S. offices with these toll-free numbers, very often you can't get through. But if you call the local office in Portland or the local office in Salem, you'll get a staff person who will pass the message along. And the same thing in every state in the country. You know, I'm sure that Cantwell and Murray, for example, in your state of Washington, have offices in Seattle, you know, relatively close to you, relatively local to you. Glenda, I got to move along. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks.
Great to hear from you. Steve in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Yeah, you got to ask these guys, if you're not going to vote for this guy, what kind of guy would you not vote for? That makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it does. And where do you draw the line? And where do you decide to fight? And at what point is this democracy and the Constitution that enables it to exist worth standing up for?
Yeah, that's not why I called them. But two things, Tom, real quick. First of all, I've got the feeling that I'm missing something here with the Secret Service and the arrest.
Right.
Hasn't the Secret Service always been able to make an arrest?
By and large, yeah. I mean, they can make
a big deal.
Well, the big deal is that let me expand it. Okay.
Okay.
I'm reading to you from the Patriot Act.
Okay.
This is how you can find it, House Report 109-333, U.S. Patriot Improvement and Reauthorization Act of 2005. Okay, this is Section 605. Quote, there is hereby created and established a permanent police force to be known as the United States Secret Service Uniform Division. Quote, the new federal police force is subject to the supervision of the Secretary of Homeland Security. Quote, the new police are empowered to make arrests without warrant for any offense against the United States committed in their presence or for any felony cognizable under the laws of the United States if they have reasonable grounds to believe that the person to be arrested is committed or is committing such a felony. Now, you're right. Police have that ability right now. If you commit a crime in front of a police officer, he doesn't have to run to a judge to get a warrant before he arrests you.
Right.
Next, the new police are assigned to a variety of jurisdictions, including, quote, an event designated under Sections 3056E of Title 18 as a special event of national significance, close quote. And then later on it says a special event of national significance is neither defined nor does it require the presence of a protected person, such as the president, in order to trigger it.
So therein lies the rub.
Yeah, and this is where Paul Craig Roberts then adds his commentary. He says, thus, the administration and perhaps the police themselves can place the special event of national significance, the SENS designation on any event. Once the SENS designation is placed on an event, the new federal police are empowered to keep out and to arrest people at their discretion. And also, it's incredibly arbitrary. You know, what is an offense against the United States and what are reasonable grounds? These are not defined. Whereas with regard to police powers in every other state, they are defined.
Okay, I'll take a look at that. I see where you're coming from now. My second question is, this gang of 14, these senators that say we won't filibuster,
right,
when they made that agreement, the Democrats and the Republicans made that agreement. The Republicans got out of it that there won't be a filibuster. What did the Democrats get out of it?
Nothing.
Good job, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Joe Lieberman is right up there at the, well, what can I say?
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve. Good to hear from you. Joy in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Joy.
Hello. I'd just like to say a few words about Sam Alito.
Okay. We have 1 minute, Joy. I'm sorry.
Pardon?
We have 1 minute before we have to take a break.
Okay. Well, the reason I oppose him is because I think he'll be for the, you know, Al Bush to do the wiretapping.
Mm-hmm.
I personally am against abortion, you know, even though I'm a strong Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he'll just give Bush too much power and the corporations too much power, and that's why I'm against him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they should filibuster, although I doubt if it'll do them any good.
Well, if they can get if they can get 41 senators to filibuster, yeah. They certainly have 41 senators who said they'll vote no. And so the question for all of these Democratic senators who have said that they're going to vote no or who have suggested that they will vote no is...
Preferred, I saw him yesterday on C-SPAN, and he's as sharp as a tack. They
yeah.
say that his pressure from his constituents is why he's voting for Alito.
Mm.
Because he's sharp as a tack, although he's 87 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the constituents, I think, is why he did.
Well, you know, he is from West Virginia, and there it is a relatively conservative state. But I have a feeling that what's happening is that in his state, and probably in a couple other strategic states, there has been launched a massive campaign by Republicans to influence these senators and let them think that, you know, it's called AstroTurf.
Perry wants a filibuster.
Yeah, you bet. But what happens is it makes them think that there's a grassroots groundswell when there actually isn't. Thanks a lot, Joy. Great to hear from you. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Who's got to pay his credit cards? Yeah, he's been dealing with the iPad, even Vegas can be.
And welcome back, my friends. 9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Bill in Seattle, Washington on the line. Hey, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Tom, how you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind, Bill?
Well, you know, every day I open my paper and I have some point, forehead-slapping moment where I just can't believe something I'm reading. And today I read the CIFA program, Counterintelligence Field Activity Program, had in its records information and data of a 10-person protest by a peace activities group outside the headquarters of Halliburton, protesting abuses of food service contract in Iraq.
Right.
They were passing out peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
I know. Yeah, that story came out several days ago, and I believe we talked about. I'm pretty sure we talked about it here on this program. These sweeps, not to mention the national security letters that the FBI has been able to issue. That story appeared and then kind of vanished after a couple of days too. The level at which they are spying on Americans is getting really and truly scary. And you know, my Manchurian candidate comment. You think that that's dead on?
Oh, I think that is absolutely right on the money. It's just you couldn't design somebody to undermine and destroy the United States better than Bush is doing.
Yeah, yeah, and sadly, tragically, Bill, I have to agree with you. I really have to agree with you. This has gone beyond you know, Democrats versus Republicans. This has gone beyond conservative viewpoint versus liberal viewpoint. These guys are dismantling this democracy step by step. Linda in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Linda, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. I know we've heard a lot about the Ford layoffs, but are you aware of the Kmart layoffs?
No, I'm not.
On January 4th, full-time employees were brought back to personnel or to the office. And they were told that they did a great job, but they had to consolidate time, you know, and that they were being put down to either part-time or they were being let go. And as far as I can tell, part-time, people that were offered around $6 an hour to reapply, but you weren't told what you would be going back at what rate or how many days.
I do remember when this happened, yes. Yes,
yeah, it was around the 4th.
Yeah, and at the same time, this was right after the Christmas season, and this was at the same time we were discovering that the very, very high-end retailers, you know, the top-end jewelry and the you know, Saks Fifth Avenues and all that, made out like bandits. They did very, very well during Christmas time, during the holiday season. And Walmart did okay. I mean, they just have enormous marketing muscle. But the other retailers who serve middle America and the bottom end of the working class, the working poor by and large, were not competing successfully against Walmart, and Kmart was one of them that took a hit.
Well, what is worse, that most of the people were over 45. And if you check on websites, when you put in layoffs and Sears Holding, they were 25 and 30 years of experience. Uh-huh. And they were just let go with no severance pay. And they were told they would be have their pay. They would get paid for that day. But we try to find out information. And what they say is they refer to this Chris Braithwaite from Sears Holding, and they won't say, they say they don't know how many people were laid off.
Yeah.
Now, if it's a public traded company, is there some way to find out how many people were laid off?
I don't believe so.
No, we don't.
The U.S. Department of Labor used to keep those statistics, and I know that under the Bush administration, they have on a number of different occasions in a number of different ways changed how they keep statistics, and frankly, at the tip of my tongue, I don't know the details of them. Probably somebody in organized labor would, but what we're seeing here, Linda, is the decimation of the American middle class.
Yeah.
And, I mean, these Kmart jobs that just vanished are the so-called good jobs that Bush is creating to replace the manufacturing jobs that have gone to China. And it's just this isn't just Bush. This is the corporatists. I mean, by pushing through NAFTA and GATT, like Bill Clinton did, who played a big role in this, what we have created now nationwide is we have turned the sovereignty of this nation away from we the people, because by law, the Constitution says that any treaty we sign becomes the law of the land. We have surrendered our sovereignty to multinational corporations.
Right.
And they're saying, you know, we're going to write your rules now.
Right.
And they are. And, you know, this is the consequence of it. This is an absolute tragedy. By the way, MoveOn.org is asking folks to call Senator Patrick Leahy at 202-224-4242 right away. They feel his support is critical for a filibuster. You can also call Senator Leahy toll-free at 1-888-355-3588. Linda, thanks a lot for the call. I've got to move along, but it's much appreciated. John in Newport Beach, California. Hey, John.
I was wondering if you could explain the program Echelon started by the NSA, I guess in the Clinton administration. Because that's what the right wingers are hammering you guys with. They're saying that Clinton did the same thing through the program Echelon.
Yeah, Echelon was a data suite program. I don't, you know, I remember reporting on it when it first came out. I don't have the details of it right in front of me, John. So let me look that up and I'll get back to you on that tomorrow.
Okay.
Monday. Steve in Southampton, New York. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? I want to make a quick comment, and then I want to ask you a question. And your response might actually...
We just have a minute, Steve.
There's two types of Democrats. And, you know, there's progressives, and then there's a more, I guess you could use the term, as conservative Democrats.
Yeah.
I personally can't see eye to eye with liberal agenda, because it's just too ideological for me.
Steve, you want to stick around? You want to call back in the next hour?
Hang on.
Okay, I'm going to put you on, and we'll pick up this conversation in the next hour. It's 56 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And good morning, good afternoon, whatever it may be. Greetings, my friends. Welcome back to the third hour of our program here. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, this from a Reuters story broke just an hour or so ago, admitted on Friday he and fellow Democrats lack the votes to block President George W. Bush's nomination of conservative appeals judge Sam Alito to the U.S. Supreme Court. However, now see, I think he's wrong, frankly. I think he's wrong, and I think over the weekend we're going to have an opportunity to change some minds. But Reid says he's going to vote for a filibuster. What he said in this I don't know if it was an interview or a speech, or he told reporters after his speech at a Washington hotel, this is it, he says, everyone knows there's not enough votes to support a filibuster. The Nevada Democrats said, however, he would vote for such a measure to at least send a message of opposition to the nominee. That vote will come on Monday with final confirmation set for Tuesday. And I'd say, Harry Reid, if you don't have enough leadership ability to pull together 41 votes to filibuster this guy, then you don't have enough leadership ability to be the leader of the Democrats in the Senate. I mean, it's really that simple. And you know, I thought Harry Reid was a guy who could really kick butt. I mean, here's a guy who took on the mafia in Nevada, you know, as a federal prosecutor, and he's been there and he's done it. He should be able to stand up to these guys. What's the deal? Come on, Harry. 1-866-440-8466, our phone number. John in New Milford, Connecticut. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Tom, you're a great American, sir.
Well, thank you. Although I'm not going to parrot another radio show by saying it back at you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, here we are.
What was I thinking?
Yeah.
What kind of coward is Harry Reid?
Well, I'm not sure that he's a coward. I want to know more about what he said and why he said it and what the context was. I'm wondering if he's actually done a poll. I'm wondering why he doesn't come out and publicize the names of those senators who are unwilling to vote for a filibuster. We don't yet know how the votes are going to break. We don't know who's going to vote how. And I would think that Harry Reid, if he had, you know, any commitment to leadership of the Democratic Party in the Senate, that he would be naming names and calling these guys out. I mean, he just absolutely should be.
And isn't it the Republicans who can hold votes open indefinitely to
yes.
twist enough arms to get enough votes to?
Yeah. Well, for example, the House rules call for a vote within 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And what has happened is that Denny Hastert and Tom DeLay have on a number of occasions violated House rules. In the case of the Medicare bill, they kept the House. They had a vote and they lost. And so they kept the vote open for 3 hours, and they kept losing and losing and losing while Tom DeLay was running around the House floor, you know, threatening people and bribing people and so on until they finally had, you know, that one vote, extra vote that they needed. And that's plain politics. That's what you do. Harry Reid,
This is too important to be playing politics, man.
Yeah.
You got to put the politics aside.
I agree.
And just, you know, real quick for the record, I just got off the phone. I'm in Connecticut, and I just got off the phone with
Lieberman's office?
With Dodd's and Lieberman's office. Dodd is going to support the filibuster, apparently, and Lieberman still hasn't made up his mind.
And Lieberman is the guy who back in 2003, in June of 2003, said that he would lead a filibuster of any candidate who might overturn Roe v. Wade.
It's funny how this stuff happens. Huh?
Yeah, well, it tells you a lot about Joe Lieberman.
Yeah.
I hope you guys do something about him there in Connecticut.
I'll do my best.
Yeah, I understand that there is a Democrat who's going to be challenging him in the primaries.
Yes, yeah. And Joe, I think, is a little scared of this guy from what I've seen and heard so far. So.
Yeah, well, we're going to track that guy. Do you know the name of that?
He's from Southern Fairfield County down by Greenwich, I think. He's a rich guy. He's a cable TV guy. Lots of money behind him, his own money.
Mm.
And I can't think of his name right now, but he apparently has got some popularity. So.
Yeah, well, if he's a Democrat and he wants to take on Joe Lieberman, I'm interested in putting him on the air. So we'll track him down, John. Thanks a lot.
Great. Tom, thank you.
Oh, John.
Tom?
Okay. Thanks a lot, John.
All right, thanks.
Howard Dean on the Today Show with Katie Couric. If you can imagine this, you know, Katie Couric throwing Republican talking points at Howard Dean. Here we go.
Corruption scandals in Congress, Tom DeLay, all these folks involved in getting money, all of whom are Republicans from Jack Abramoff. We need a real
overhaul of Congress.
Hey, wait a
second. Democrats took money from Jack Abramoff, too, Mr. Dean.
That is absolutely false. That did not happen. Not one dime of money from Jack Abramoff went to any Democrat
at any
time.
Let me just tell you, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, Abramoff and his associates gave $3 million to Republicans and $1.5 million to Democrats,
Not one dime of Jack Abramoff money ever went to any Democrat. We can show you the FEC reports. We'd be very happy to do it. There's a lot of stuff in the press that the Republican National Committee has been spinning. This is a bipartisan scandal. It is a Republican finance scandal. Not one dime of money from Jack Abramoff ever went to any Democrat. Not one dime.
Not one dime. Not one dime. You tell them hard. I mean, there's Howard Dean, at least a decent leader for the Democratic Party. Now, it's not his job to lead the fight in the Senate about Alito. And, in fact, as somebody who's supposed to represent all the Democrats, it would be very inappropriate for Howard Dean to be speaking out about this. He's supposed to be, representing the entire party, and the party has a range of opinions in it. But if such leadership were present right now, I can't believe that Alito would be getting through. And I hope that it doesn't. We need to get out there and really get out there and nail this thing. At 9:15 a.m., CNN's Pacific time. CNN's Miles O'Brien spouted Karl Rove propaganda by going after Kerry in a nasty way over being in Davos when he announced the filibuster. Is CNN's position that senators should never travel? I mean, here Miles O'Brien. Yeah, right. I am not going to negatively characterize it. We don't do personal attacks here, right? Right. Okay. Miles O'Brien, CNN, quoting Karl Rove in saying that Kerry phoned in a filibuster from Davos. Well, yeah, and the Republicans are trying, or quoting Scotty McClellan, actually. Scotty McClellan said it twice this morning from the podium in the White House that, John Kerry phoned this in from Switzerland. We think he ought to be here. Well, he's in Davos for the World Economic Forum. The World Trade Organization meeting. I mean, he's doing our business. Thank you very much. So here you've got Republican propaganda. It's really starting to get ugly. It is really starting to get ugly. Cheryl in Arcata, California. Hey, Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. This is a situation right now that we're dealing with that, it's just scary times, in so many respects. And one of the things that's just infuriating to me, and this is just one of the many issues, of course, is that we have Bush's top advisor, Karl Rove, adding a CIA agent, Valerie Plame, and the turd blossom, as Bush affectionately calls him, lied to the court saying that he did not do this. So, he's getting away with an obstruction of justice.
Well, so far.
So far. But this is a serious crime, and the fact that he hasn't been indicted is kind of scary, but even scarier.
How serious is it? I mean, we ask Bush, how serious is this crime? And
I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah. So.
Well, yeah, and it's like the lies just keep going. And if we do not have also an independent investigation and just we glaze over the Abramoff case and we don't flush out people like Richard Pombo, who's like a one-man destruction derby out there for the environment.
But here's I know a lot of folks in California really get it about Pombo, but here's the problem, Cheryl. As long as the Republicans control both the House and the Senate, they are using Gestapo-like techniques. I mean, they're absolutely preventing things from coming, literally bills from coming to the floor for a vote. For example, Rush Holt's bill that's been sitting there for 5 years that would at least bring some small measure of security to voting machines. And he has Republican co-sponsors to this thing. He probably has enough votes to pass the thing in the House, but still the Republican leadership won't let it come even out of committee. They won't even let it come to a vote. And this is why it's so important that we get out there, we get active, we support the Democratic Party and bring Democrats to power both at the local level and at the national level, and then that we hold their feet to the fire so that they don't wimp out like it seems so many of them are doing right now with this Alito nomination.
No, I can't agree more. And it's like we just definitely have to get back the House, because if we don't, we're just going to have a continuance of destruction and deception and more post-traumatic Bush disorder, which I suffer from.
Post-traumatic Bush disorder. That's
yeah, it's a terrible affliction.
It is. I think. Well, the nation is suffering from it in a very
real way,
Cheryl. I mean, you know, it's funny and it's not funny because that's the tragedy. You've got people out there being thrown out of work, people who don't have health insurance, people, you know, millions of people who are food insecure, you know, don't know where their next meal is going to come from. More than 20 million people in the United States. I mean, that shouldn't be what America is all about. America is better than that. Cheryl, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. It's great to hear from you. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the Tom Hartman radio program. Days after photos surfaced showing President George W. Bush together with disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff, Vice President Dick Cheney attempted to put some distance between himself and the embattled president, telling reporters that he and Mr. Bush had never met. This from Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. I do not know this person you call George W. Bush, Mr. Cheney flatly stated at a press conference in Washington today. Mr. Cheney explained that because he spent most of his time at his secure, undisclosed location, his path had simply never crossed with that of Mr. Bush. The vice president's claim that he did not know the president strained the credulity of the White House press corps, many of whom recall seeing the two men together at one time or another. But President Bush, aiming to put some distance between himself and the vice president because of Mr. Cheney's possible implication in the CIA leak case, spoke to reporters later in the day and sounded the same notes that Mr. Cheney had earlier. Dick Cheney, he said, sounds familiar, but doesn't ring a bell. At the president's press conference, however, one reporter held up a file containing over 40,000 photos of Mr. Bush with Mr. Cheney and asked the president for an explanation. The president said, trick photography? The day ended with a press briefing by White House spokesman Scott McClellan, who denied knowing either Mr. Bush or Mr. Cheney. Elsewhere, Secretary of Defense Don Rumsfeld denied that the U.S. military was stretched thin and near the snapping point, but acknowledged that that was true of him. Indeed. The Chinese authorities have shut down an outspoken weekly publication in their latest effort to rein in that country's increasingly independent news media. The Communist Party's propaganda department on Tuesday ordered the closure of Bingyan Weekly, an insert in the party-affiliated China Youth Daily newspaper. Authorities have jailed several Chinese journalists the past 2 years and moved to tone down feistier publications. Late last month, officials removed three top editors at a popular tabloid, the Beijing News, known for its reporting on sensitive issues. At the same time, we have this report from Reuters. China is preparing to, quote, strike hard, end quote, against rising public unrest, a senior police official said, according to state media on Thursday. The official said, for a considerable time to come, our country will be in a period of pronounced contradictions within the people, which is, by the way, an old Maoist term used to describe domestic social unrest, high crime rates, and a complex struggle against enemies. He also claimed that terrorism was a real threat against their country and that one of the reasons why the communist Chinese government is going to be cracking down on dissidents and on people who speak out is because of the threat of terrorism. Does that sound familiar? Meanwhile, Bloomberg reports. This is where it gets really bizarre. Keep in mind, if General Motors wants to ship a car to China, they have to pay a 25% tariff. If the Chinese want to ship a car to the United States, 2% tariff. Meanwhile, and thus, all our jobs are going to China, and all of this, you know, the CEOs all across America getting rich and giggling like crazy, and as the middle class is wiped out. Meanwhile, the Pentagon, this from Bloomberg News, the Pentagon has directed the Navy to assume a greater presence in the Western Pacific by adding at least one aircraft carrier and five nuclear submarines. Now, why would they do that? An increase which will put half the Navy's aircraft carriers and 60% of its submarine fleet in the Pacific. Why? It's largely driven, according to this report, Bloomberg, largely driven by the Pentagon's concern over China's increased military might. China, representing a military threat to us, No, we can't build tanks anymore. I'm sorry. We can't build missiles anymore. We need parts from China. We can't build an Aegis-class destroyer or battleship. We have to have parts from China. But China announced last month that its military spending in 2005 would grow by 13%, following increases of 11.5% last year. In 2004, 9.6%. In 2005, and 17.6% in 2002. Admiral William Fallon told Congress, China's military buildup is unprecedented and proceeding quite rapidly. He's the guy who's the U.S. Pacific Command's commander. He said their military buildup includes short and intermediate range missiles, submarines, and Russian-made Su-30 fighters. The Pentagon is now recommending that by 2012... the General Dynamics Northrop Grumman Corp. Virginia-class attack submarine be manufactured at the rate of 2 a year instead of the current rate of 1 a year. Why? To deal with the threat of essentially war, the potential for war with China. And yet, at the same time, we're handing our entire industrial infrastructure to them. China cracking down on people inside the country. And then, of course, you know, Google will be called to task in Washington next month. Chris Smith, Republican congressman from New Jersey, who chairs a House Subcommittee on Human Rights, is calling a February 16th hearing to find out what's the deal. Google, whose corporate philosophy is don't be evil, now participating along with Yahoo, Microsoft, Cisco, and others in helping the Chinese communist dictatorship clamp down on the people, essentially, by censoring content. Mr. Smith's on Wednesday, this is from the Financial Times, in a statement drew comparisons between Google and Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Asia, suggesting that Google could be like them, reflecting on the capacity the radio stations had on empowering the voices of freedom throughout communist countries. Well, I think Mr. Smith doesn't understand the economics of all this. The simple and tragic reality is that if Google says we won't censor your content, then China will censor Google. They'll just lock them out of the market. Why? Well, because Cisco sold them the equipment to do it. And the simple reality is if Cisco didn't, China would develop it themselves. In fact, they may be selling half the stuff that Cisco's using. Who knows? And it's not just Cisco. I mean, you know, it goes on and on. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, 34 minutes past the hour. Rob Call is the editor and founder of opednews.com. Fine progressive news website and organizer of cutting-edge meetings on the brain, positive psychology, and the arts, science, and application of story. Hey, Rob, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom.
Great to have you back on with us. Rob, I understand that Op-Ed News just funded a poll with the Zogby organization in the state of Pennsylvania. I'm sure, I think that this has national significance, and I'm also sure that our listeners on WPTT in Pittsburgh will be very interested in this. What'd you learn?
Well, the first thing is the big race. The biggest race this year is the race to decide who's going to replace Rick Santorum, and all the right wing Democrats, the DLC Democrats, have been supporting Bob Casey. What we found for the first time after many polls were done in this state, we were the first ones to ask about all the candidates running. And we were the first ones to actually state in the poll what each candidate's position is on a number of issues, on abortion, on stem cell research, PAC money, war in Iraq, troops in Iraq, and getting out.
Bob Casey's position on almost all of those is pretty much the same as George Bush's position, isn't it?
And Rick Santorum's.
Yeah, and Rick Santorum's.
Yes, they look very similar.
Although Casey is a Democrat. He's kind of a Joe Lieberman Democrat, is that what you say?
I would say that, yes.
Yeah.
So bottom line is, when we asked the question again after people found out how what their positions were, Casey's lead collapses.
So he's no longer able to beat Santorum once people find out that he's actually a right-wing Democrat.
Exactly. He actually scores lower than his two other professed liberal Democratic contenders. Both Chuck Panaccio and Alan Sandals both get a higher percentage of responders than Casey.
Now, this was not a survey of Democrats. This was a survey of right across the board. There was
this was a scientific Zogby poll where basically I went to them with the questions and I said I want an ethical scientific poll that's really going to give us the clearest picture so that Democrats who are voting in the primary can really make a clear decision of who's going to win or who's going to have the best chance.
So what we learned from this poll, Rob, and I know that if you, my recollection is you told me it was 34% Democrats, 29% Republicans, and then the balance were independents, because that reflects the electorate of Pennsylvania.
No, it's 40. It was about 41% Democrats, 39% Republicans, 20% independents.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. And that reflects the electorate in Pennsylvania, right?
Yes.
Okay, and so what this shows is that when a progressive candidate, a truly progressive candidate like Chuck Panaccio or Mr. Sandals is put up against, for example, a right-winger like Rick Santorum, they will beat them. But when a lame, weak Democrat, a Joe Lieberman Democrat, is put up against somebody like Rick Santorum, you can flip a coin.
Yeah, you know, I had
which, by the way, proves what Harry Truman said. Harry Truman, you know, who tried to introduce national health care legislation in the United States in 1946 and tried to override a veto of the Taft-Hartley Act. Harry Truman said, if people are given the choice between voting for a Republican or a Democrat who behaves like a Republican, they will choose the Republican every time.
Absolutely. Well, the conservatives, Santorum's support is rock solid. Casey's is very weak. It's mud. It's very weak. And it's particularly weak among a number of different demographic groups. The 18 to 24-year-olds, he's really...
We can't break all this out, yeah. Rob. I know that there's a bunch of other things that you learned from this poll. Let's get to the issues.
Okay,
that
electronic...
Have.
I called you, and I wanted to get a suggestion from you on the poll issues, and your suggestion was to find out how people feel about who owns the voting technology. So we put two questions in there on that for you.
Thank you.
One was about voting machines and other voting technology. Should it be contracted out to and owned and operated by private businesses and corporations, or should it be owned by the government, by municipalities in the state? And the answer is 67% say it should be owned by the government and 21% privatized. That's a pretty strong message.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, the next one is this issue that Greg Palast raised in his book, Best Democracy Money Could Buy, about how outsourced companies that were doing the voter registration and who's eligible to vote, the kind of stuff that Catherine Harris pulled down in Florida. And what we found there was in Pennsylvania, 80% of the people want the state or the municipality to own the technology, manage the records, and manage the eligibility. 13.2% say it's okay to farm it out and give it to corporations. Pretty amazing numbers, huh?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Now, in terms of paper ballots, which is another important issue, here in Pennsylvania, they haven't followed through on HAVA all the way. So they haven't. There are a lot of counties that have lever machines. Lever machines are old. It takes money to maintain them. But all the experts say they're very trustworthy and reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've gotten there is 11.6% of the people trust electronic. 73% trust electronic if the record is kept on a paper ballot, and 11.6% only want paper or lever machines. So 85% to 11.6% supporting paper.
That's extraordinary.
And it's going to, this is a message that's got to get to the governor and to the secretary of state, who are really fooling around with this.
And to all these various politicians out there of all stripes in all areas.
And Pennsylvania has the blue cities, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and State College, and the rest of it is Alabama in the middle.
Yeah, we're also on the air in State College, as well as Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I just said.
Yeah, and so now you also asked a question about public financing of campaigns.
Yes, we did.
What'd you learn?
What did we learn? It's about 2-1. People want that.
66-27%.
Let me pull that one up. Where'd it go? I've got a lot of questions here, and it's all on this poll sheet here.
Well, I have your notes, Rob. 66% supported giving candidates a fixed amount of money to prevent influence buying, compared with 27% who supported allowing them to raise as much money as they want from individuals, industry, and corporations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
then you also found 59% support a minimum wage. Now, you say support the minimum wage. Did you ask the question support raising the minimum wage or support the existence of
raising
a minimum wage?
Raising the minimum wage.
Okay. Did you specify how high it should be raised?
Didn't say, no.
Simply raising it. 59. So, 60, almost 60%. Interesting.
I'll give you another one that most media won't touch, and I know you won't mind it. I asked the question, would you support or oppose a law that would require local and national media to give free ad time to all qualifying candidates running for a particular office? And
mm-hmm.
This is the follow-up question after saying give a fixed amount of money, because the biggest money issue for a campaign is buying TV time.
Right.
65% say yes, 26.6 say no.
Wow.
Massive. This country is ready to take back the elections and clean them up. And I wonder how many TV stations would sponsor a poll like that.
Just for our listeners who may have just tuned in, we're talking with Rob Call of opednews.com. And Rob has, or opednews.com, hired the Zogbia organization to do a stand-up, straight-up, scientific poll of the broad sweep of the electorate of the state of Pennsylvania on a series of specific issues. And they found that in the race for governor, for example, that the progressive Democratic candidates, for the United States Senate, that the progressive candidates would, Democratic candidates would easily beat Rick Santorum, whereas the...
And pull higher percentages than Casey, the Lieberman lookalike.
Yeah. And you finished my sentence for me. And now, you also asked, do you think that Bush was right to do the wiretaps, the NSA wiretaps?
Yes, and the answer that we got on that one is no. And I just saw on the news that the New York Times has a poll that is saying that people supported that, but not here.
You mean a majority? More than 50% of Americans support? Yeah, see, that's the thing. I mean, Bush has been out there doing his PR campaign on this thing, you know, for, what, a week now?
It's all in how you ask the questions. We gave a detailed question that spelled out how Bush could have gotten permission but didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did that, 54% said that Bush, if he's found guilty of violating the law against wiretapping, American citizens should be impeached.
Right.
And 43% disagreed. And we've got some more on this, too. Did Bush violate the law and the Constitution with an illegal wiretapping operation against American citizens? 51.3% say yes, 42% say no. Now, this is totally contradicts what a lot of the other polls say out there, and I think it's because they're failing to ask that question with the mention of the fact that he could have gotten, after the fact, permission.
Right. And also you asked, do you agree or disagree that if President Bush is found guilty of violating the law against wiretapping American citizens, he should be impeached? And what percentage said he should be impeached if guilty?
You got it there in front of you.
53.7%, as opposed to 42.5% who said no. Fascinating.
Another interesting issue, too.
Rob, we're out of time. Fascinating stuff. I really appreciate your being with us. Rob Call, opednews.com. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What could have possessed you, sir? Writes Carolyn Kay to Harry Reid to tell Reuters that you don't have enough votes to stall cloture on the Alito nomination. In other words, to override a filibuster. You Democrats keep doing this. You declare defeat before the battle's even joined. Meanwhile, the Republicans declare victory when they don't have it. They thereby create an aura of inevitability that often carries them on to unlikely victories. Why can't Democrats do the same? It's just not that difficult to figure out. Indeed. Indeed. You don't declare defeat before the battle. You don't say, oh, we're going to roll over before the vote is even taken. You don't do it. You don't do it if you're a talk show host. You don't do it if you're a politician. You just don't do it. This is crazy that Harry Reid came out and said this. 1-866-440-8466, our phone number, David and Blaine. Hey, David, what's on your mind today? David? No, David. No, apparently not. Let's go to Daryl and... Let's go to Daryl in San Diego. Hey, Daryl, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up? I'll get better.
You know, listening to your program, I was going to talk about Jack Abramoff, but you just so many things. But I'll talk about Jack Abramoff anyways. You know, I don't think he's going to be allowed to testify or talk because I think he's going to be silenced. He's going to be suicided or have a stroke or he's going to... have a tragic accident or something like that.
Well, let's hope not, Daryl. I suspect that this is high profile enough now that kind of thing, well, you just never know. You just never know. You know, Abbie Hoffman was writing a piece on the October Surprise for Playboy magazine, and all of a sudden he decides to commit suicide. You just never know.
Yeah, I just think so. All that stuff you're talking about, China, too. Very, very scary. If I were Taiwan and I were Japan, I'd immediately go nuclear.
Well, I think that, you know, Japan is moving in that direction. And you know, there are people, you know, scratching their heads about Taiwan, but Japan is definitely going in that direction.
Yeah.
And, you know, having a big debate, an internal debate about it. But
yeah. We're just getting stretched too thin. It's terrible. Yeah. I hate it.
I agree with you. Thanks a lot, Daryl. Good to hear from you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in. And let's go back to David and Blaine again. Hey, I guess we can't because he's talking to Dan. Now we can. There we go. Hey, David.
Hi, Tom.
What's up?
Yeah, here's a bombshell of a reminder for all the liberal progressive sovereigns. Where the people fear the government, you have tyranny. Where the government fears the people, you have liberty.
That sounds very familiar.
And I'm noticing a pattern with...
No, hang on just a second. Who said that?
It was in my Citizens Rule book. I think it was Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, I was going to say it was one of the founders. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it unbelievable? I mean,
yeah.
it's so timely.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm noticing a pattern with the true Democrats and how they've handled their minority role since the Supreme Court selected Bush. And even though Alito and Roberts' nomination deserve to be blasted out of the water, it feels that the real Democrats are choosing their battles very carefully because the situation right now is so complex. There's multiple scandals and this mountain of corruption that's about to blow up in their face. Like, which one do you pick, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Supreme Court, sure, that nomination's important, but it's a small battle compared to the larger...
Well, the larger issue, David, is that you don't choose not to fight a battle just because you might lose it. The reality is that the way that the Republicans got their message out over and over and over again is by fighting every single battle, because when you fight a battle, you have an opportunity to put out your point of view, and even if you lose, 5 more people heard about it. You know, 10 more people were influenced, 100, you know, or 5,000 or 50,000 or 500,000. And over and over and over again, you fight for what you believe in. And if you don't fight for what you believe in, then people start figuring, well, they must not really believe in that. And that's what's,
right.
excuse
and
me,
when, you know, in the 2000s,
that's what's happening right now to the Democratic Party is people are looking around going, these guys must not really believe this stuff.
Wow. And
they must really not think Alito represents a threat, or why wouldn't they be laying down in front of a truck to stop him?
Oh, unbelievable. Jackson said, keep hope alive in the 2000 Democratic convention. And so I think that applies here as well.
Yeah. Well said, David. Very well said. Thank you for the call. Mary in Seattle. Hey, Mary.
Okay. I've called many senatorial offices, my Democrats.
Good on you.
I've called Patty Murray previously. No one has ever been able to tell me why we worry about a nuclear option because no one can tell me what it is.
Okay. You want me to tell you what it is?
Well, I kind of know what it is, but they don't seem to know. they can't put it into any kind of practicality. Why don't you tell me what it is?
Well, the nuclear option just means that they vote to change the rules of the Senate to do away with the filibuster.
Yeah, okay. Is that going to make a difference? My Senator Patty Murray and Hillary Clinton threatened to filibuster the FDA commissioner if they didn't release Plan B.
Yeah, I mean, I believe the reality is that they could possibly, now I may be wrong on this, but they may be possible to filibuster an attempt to pull a nuclear option. I mean, there's a whole debate about how this can be done.
Well,
but by and large, I think the Republicans are bluffing on the nuclear option.
But I just want to tell you, they agreed not to filibuster. The nominee passed. Republicans lied or reneged or didn't fulfill their promise in exchange, called my senator, asked him what in the world would they do. I'm sorry, we can't do anything. We're Democrats.
No, they didn't say that, Mary.
Yeah, they did.
Are you serious?
Yes, they did.
You had a staff person for what, Patty Murray or Maria Cantwell?
This is Patty Murray. She was the one that threatened the
A staff it. Member of Patty Murray said, we can't do anything, we're Democrats?
Yeah. They
oh, she meant it facetiously as in,
no,
as in saying
I'm
we're
sorry.
The minority party?
I'm sorry. This is when it happened. This was, what, 6-7 months ago?
I see.
This is from before we actually really cared about it.
But the point that they were making was that they were in the minority and the Republicans controlled the majority.
They told me Republicans control everything. We can't do anything.
Right. Yeah. Well, to some extent that's true, but what they still have is the power of the filibuster, and they damn well better exercise it. Mary, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program, conservative Harvey Kushner says Americans have nothing to fear from being spied on. Yeah, we'll have a conversation about that. John Hagee, author of Jerusalem Countdown, will be here. Tune into the Tom Hartman program, the place where smart people get the news. And remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag. You're it. We'll see you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.